Hello and welcome to this episode of Restoring Nature's Tapestry, a podcast series from CityWire in association with Federated Hermes. My name is Richard Lander of CityWire, and our discussion today is about the fashion industry and the heavy role it plays in adding to biodiversity loss. No matter whether we buy fast fashion or designer labels, supply chains in the sector are directly linked to the destruction of large natural environments, soil degradation, and contamination. Cotton, for example, gets a good press as a natural fabric, but it really does require more insecticide than any other crop. And then, of course, the fabrics we wear have to be dyed and treated, and that's the source of about a quarter of industrial water pollution around the world. So to help me look at how fashion companies are harming diversity and what can be done about it, I'm joined by two experts on the subject. With me in the CityWire studio, it's Lisa Lang of EOS, the engagement arm of Federated Hermes. And dialing in remotely, we have Josie Wexler of Ethical Consumer, an organisation which, as its name implies, helps people make informed ethical choices about the goods and the services they consume. So welcome to you both. Thank you for joining me. Josie, I'm going to start with you. Let's just go beyond what I said in the introduction. What impact does the fashion industry have on biodiversity?
Well, it has quite a large one, partly because the amount of land that the growing the fibre takes up, which is particularly concentrated more in the natural fibres, really, and they're overwhelmingly heavy in, for example, wool, but also cotton. And the pollution that results, that's often more associated with synthetic fibres, so there are trade-offs here. And also there is the interlink with climate change, because climate change is a huge threat to biodiversity. So the climate impact of the fashion industry also has a sort of indirect effect on biodiversity as well. There is no agreement at the moment on how much of the world's climate carbon emissions that clothing is responsible for. You get these huge divergence in figures between about 2 to about 10%. I think 10% it can't be right. That's just too high. So it's probably more at the bottom end of that. But it's a significant contributor. That makes it basically about the same size as the electronics
right.
industry.
Okay, that's good of you to scale it for us. Is it all about fast fashion, or does upmarket fashion have a similar role in this?
No, it's just about the industry in general. And a lot of the time, upmarket fashion can be as more damaging. I mean, for example, I think we're going to talk about fur, but the fur industry is astonishingly damaging both on all environmental metrics.
Okay.
Really.
I mean, Lisa, let's bring you in here. You deal with these companies. How do they respond when you challenge them and say, look, can we talk about this? How can we reduce the damage that you're doing to the earth?
I think the response is very varied. So I have some companies that I talk to on behalf of our clients that have quite a good understanding how important it is to manage their impacts on the environment. And I have some companies that are more new to the game, especially in outside of Europe. And when it comes to biodiversity, it's still a little bit of a new topic. I think we have a very mature discussion with companies around climate and around carbon emissions. A lot of companies have set carbon emissions reduction targets. And I think that's also what highlights how biodiversity is maybe a little bit more of a complex issue, because it's much more difficult to measure and much more difficult to understand what your impacts are. So I think what we're starting to see is companies trying to consider what their impacts and also their dependencies on biodiversity is. And then from that, maybe we can discuss that in more detail. But I think a lot of discussions and approaches from companies are still very much in their infancy.
Do you think fashion companies are more concerned with the social aspect of ESG, that there's been a lot of publicity about, let's face it, terrible conditions in factories in the developing world? is that taking a priority for them, trying to fix that problem? And then this is a lesser problem at the moment, perhaps.
I wouldn't say a lesser problem. I would say a less developed approach. I think companies are very aware that they need to have good oversight of their supply chains to consider the impacts on human rights. That is a discussion we've had with companies for a long time already. So that is a very mature discussion. We know what best practice looks like. When it comes to biodiversity, I think there's generally an understanding that there is increased interest from different stakeholders, including investors, but there is much less of an established best practice that we can hold companies up against.
Okay, thanks. Josie, back to you. You mentioned just a few minutes ago, you talked about fur and leather. And the effect that they have on the environment. Two questions here: is that a different quantum from cotton and synthetic fibres in terms of the damage it does to biodiversity?
Well, with both of them, there's a sort of slight trade-off because, like for example, leather lasts a long time, so leather tends to have quite heavy impacts on both the climate and on pollution, because the tanning process is generally pretty polluting. But on the other hand, you do have to bear in mind that some of the faux leathers might last, if they last half the amount of time and the pollution and it affects a half as much, that cancels itself out. So it's not always completely clear, but leather and certainly fur has a very heavy pollution impact.
Right. And Lisa, when you talk to the companies that for the investors that you're representing, where are they in terms of finding alternative fabrics that might be less environmentally damaging than some of the ones we've mentioned so far?
I think there's a lot of innovation in the space. I think the question is only for me how scalable those solutions are and how fast that scalability is to really address the negative impacts. I think what really changes or like shifts the industry is if we look at the things that are most used and reduce the impacts of those fibers. So for instance, cotton, we've discussed, yes, it is very highly water intensive. It can lead to soil degradation, pesticide use. So it has a lot of impacts, but it is one of the most commonly used materials. So I think companies should really look at how to make the production of cotton more sustainable, looking into regenerative agricultural practices, and then also looking at the durability of clothes. I think Josie mentioned this trade-off. So I think if you have clothes but people can wear them longer, there is a secondhand market. Overall, the impacts will be lower. And of course, also look at recyclability.
You talked about some interesting companies on the cutting edge of getting new fabrics going. How does that compare? Obviously, another side of biodiversity is the foods we eat, and you know there's people are making great breakthroughs in lab grown chicken and other meat substitutes. Are we seeing the same progress here, or is it slower or faster?
It's difficult to compare. I can share that I'm aware that a lot of large apparel companies are heavily investing in that space, but how fast that will take off is to be seen. I think from my personal experience with alternative meats, that has already taken off quite a lot. So I think it's maybe lagging a little bit behind, but I think that's my personal perception rather than a very informed opinion of the entire kind of alternative meats market.
And these companies are serious about this. It's not just sort of greenwashing. I mean, I'm sure every day your job is involved with sorting out the greenwashers from the people making genuine efforts.
I think, as I said, that is to be seen. I think a lot of companies are saying the right things, but it is us that have to hold them to account over the next 2-3 years if there's actually scalable solutions.
Right. And of course, you're doing this for investors. I mean, EOS works for investors, dialogues with the companies and reports back to them. On the other side, are the investors encouraging you more to hold these companies account in terms of biodiversity?
I think so. We have a very active client base of, I think, around 60 large institutional investors now that we also meet on a regular basis at various events. I think we have a Clyde Advisory Council where we have a very active exchange. And I've presented to our clients around the apparel sector and environmental impacts before. I got very interesting questions. They're very engaged. I think the apparel sector overall is a sector that has a lot of the priority themes for our clients, which is climate, human rights, and biodiversity is so linked to climate that I think that is definitely of great interest for them.
So you're not going to run out of things to question them about, I can see.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I'm definitely not worried.
Josie, coming back to you, we've one thing that occurred to me, based out of personal experiences, through lockdown, did we change our attitudes to fast fashion? I think quite a lot of us operated from home. Probably some of us didn't get out of our pajamas for most of the day. You know, we found, you know, this sort of typical person in the city did not have to have five clean shirts every week. Probably needed one for the one day that they did come in. Have our attitudes changed to fast fashion in terms of, do we need so much stuff in our wardrobes?
To be honest, the last figures that I've seen suggested that the quantity bought is still going up. The secondhand market as well is very unhealthy in that there's a huge excess of clothes that could be sold secondhand that are not. Most clothing in secondhand shops doesn't sell. And it either gets dumped or it gets dumped on poor countries who often don't like it because it can undermine their sort of baby clothing industries. Yeah, there's untapped potential there. But yeah, I think unfortunately we're going on buying more and more.
Well, not me personally, but that's a sample size of one, so we won't take any conclusions from that. Let's just, before we wrap up...
May I add to this maybe?
Yeah, come on.
I think, Josie, that's a really interesting point. I agree with you. All the predictions are just, we're buying more and more stuff. Questionable if we really need that. But I think what I wanted to share is that I also had some discussions with platforms that sell clothes from different brands, and they're really looking at what the consumers are searching for on the website. And I do think there is an uptake of filtering with articles that have some more sustainable aspects, be that recycled materials, be that organic cotton. So I think there is maybe a little bit more interest from the consumer to understand the sustainability of the clothes. To what extent that is that will continue, and to what extent that actually shifts the market, I think is still to be seen as well.
Right. I mean, we are entering a very difficult period of for the economy. Do you think that will have an effect that people will buy fewer clothes, they'll make efforts to recycle more?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, people might start buying more secondhand, and there is a lot of potential here. Like, I think RAP found that 75% of people had disposed of clothing just because it no longer fit, or they didn't like it anymore, or they didn't need it anymore. Not that there was anything wrong with it. So this was 75% of people throwing clothes away. So there's a lot of potential to extend the lifespan of clothes.
Would you agree with that, Lisa, that companies could do more to encourage people to recycle their clothes? Or, I mean, it's quite a question to ask, because, you know, who's going to say, do you want to reduce your sales next year by encouraging the secondhand market?
Well, I think the key is, can they profit from these alternative business models themselves? And I do think there is thinking around that, around having a product offering where maybe clothes could be resold as part of the offering that they have already. I think those are, in my opinion, currently pilot projects. I think it's good that there is a lot of experimentation in that area, and I hope some of these will be successful.
Great. Well, on that slightly optimistic note, we'll wrap up. I'd like to thank Lisa Lang of EOS and Josie Wexler of Ethical Consumer for joining us today. And I think it's been a really interesting discussion. It's a serious problem. Let's hope that some solutions emerge that will ameliorate things. And that's it from us. Thank you. And thank you for listening.